All right, Joe, say good morning. So let's begin. Today's daf is Pei Dalid. We're going to pick up 84. We're going to pick up actually at the two dafs on Pei Gimel Amud Beis. Amar Rav Halach Reb Shimon Gamliel. So remember again, the Mishnah called Reb Shimon Gamliel said that if a man goes ahead and says to his wife, Dinu Dvarim Eli B'nechsayach U'Beperi Sehen U'Beperi Peiro Sehen B'chayach U'Bemoseich. So remember, the Mishnah ruled that he doesn't eat the peros when she's alive, and if she dies, he doesn't inherit her. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, not true. Even if she dies, if she dies, he does inherit her. Why? Because otherwise, that's mas namasha kasuv batorah. Ultimately, you are going ahead and making a stipulation on something that is written in Torah, because again, apparently, Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that midaraisa, a husband inherits his wife. And therefore, again, and then call mas namasha kasuv batorah to no batal. Whenever you make a tenai on something that is written in the Torah, the tenai ultimately is batal. So says the Gemara, Amar Rav, Halakha Reb Shimon Gamliel. So Rav says that Halakha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel. So we'll say again, remember, so Reb Shimon Gamliel therefore says, even if you explicitly say, I don't want anything to do with your property, when you're alive, when you're dead, so everyone else is going to say he doesn't inherit her. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, no, he still inherits her because that is a biblical right. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav, Halakha Reb Shimon Gamliel, below me tame. So Rav said, Halakha follows Reb Shimon Gamliel, but not for his reasoning. Not because of his reasoning. Now, what does that mean? My halakha Reb Shimon Gamliel v'lo mitame. What does it mean? The halakha of Reb Shimon Gamliel, but not for his reasoning. Ilei my halakha Reb Shimon Gamliel da'amar imesa yirashena. So, if you want to say that the halakha of Reb Shimon Gamliel, who says that if she dies, even after he said, dinu dvarim ili b'nechsayich, that she still inherits her. V'lo mitame. Dilei Reb Shimon Gamliel savar masna masha kasu batara to no batal. Because Reb Shimon Gamliel holds the reason for that is because when you make a stipulation that runs counter to biblical law, so the Tanai is batal. That's what Reb Shimon Gamliel holds, that he inherits her. However, V'Rav Savar Tano Kayim. And Rav will say, no, the truth is, even when you make a Tanai on something that is written in the Torah, the Tanai is still upheld. So the Gemara says, really? V'Kasavar Yerusha Savar D'Rabban. So we'll say, if that's the case, if Rav holds that if you make a Tanai, if your mas namasha kasuv batorah, the tanai still stands. So how come the husband inherits the wife? So the Gemara will say, "Aye, Rav will hold v'kasav yirusha saval d'rabbanon." Rav will hold that the right husband's right to inherit his wife is d'rabbanon. The chachamim asu chizuk l'diren yosem mishal Torah, and the chachamim went ahead and made their laws more stringent even than biblical law. So that's what Rav means when he says the halacha follows Reb Shimon Gamliel, but not for the reasoning that Reb Shimon Gamliel espouses. So the Gemara says, "V'savar Rav Tano Kayim." Is that true? Does Rav hold that if you're masna mashakas v'atarah, if you make a stipulation that runs counter to Torah law, that the Tanai stands? V'ha itmar. But yet we learned, "Ha'omer lechaveiro amenas she'in lecha alai onar." Let's listen to this case. I do a business deal with Reuven, and I say to Reuven, "I'm selling you this item on the condition that you have no claims of onar." Remember, onar is overcharging. Overcharging. So the halacha is less than a sixth, negligible. Over a sixth, transaction is voided. A sixth, that's up to the discretion of the parties involved, really up to the purchaser if he wants to void it or not. So let's say I say, Reuven, I'm selling you this item on the condition that you have no claims of onah against me. So what's the halacha? Rav amr yesh alav onah. Ushmuel amr ein lo alav onah. So we'll say, so let's work backwards. Shmuel says, actually, I'm sorry, let's go forward. Rav says that Lemaise said, yeah, no, you can't stipulate like that. Why? Because I can't make a stipulation that runs counter to biblical law. Shmuel says, yes, you can. So what do you see from here? You see that Rav agrees with Reb Shimon Gamliel that Masna Amasha Kasa Bator, if you make a stipulation that runs counter to biblical law, the Tanai is batal. Ela, so what does Rav mean when he says that the halakha follows Reb Shimon Gamliel, but not for his reasoning? Ela halakha Reb Shimon Gamliel. But rather again, Rav holds that the halacha of Shimon Gamliel, who holds mas, if you make a stipulation that runs counter to biblical law, your tanai is batal. V'lav mitame, but not for his reasoning. Why? Because Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that when a wife dies, her husband inherits her. V'rav savar lo yirashena, but Rav holds that lemaisa again. Rav holds that the husband's right to inherit his wife is not a biblical one, but rather, again, only a rabbinic one. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that's why Rav says that the halacha of Reb Shimon Gamliel, that lamaisa again masna mashakasa Torah to know batal, and therefore again, even if a husband stipulates that he's not going to inherit his wife, he still does inherit her. So Rav says yes, but not for the same reason. Why? Because Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that a husband's right to inherit his wife is biblical. Rav will hold that it's dirabanan, it's rabbinic. But yet the rabbis made their laws in certain circumstances even more chumer than biblical law. So the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, hamitame v'lo kil chaseu. Well, if that's the case, then really he's agreeing with the logic of Rav Shimon Gamliel, but lamaisa again, disagreeing with some of the halachic parameters. Elo halach Rav Shimon Gamliel, da'amar imesi rashana. Rather, again, Rav says, da'alach laz Rav Shimon Gamliel, that says that if she dies, husband inherits her, v'lav mi tamei, but not for his reasoning. Why? Dither Rav Shimon Gamliel, savar b'dara isa t'no batal, because Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that Rav Shimon say, if you go out and you make a t'nai that runs counter to biblical law, the t'nai is batal. What we can infer from that is what? That if a person made a t'nai regarding rabbinic law, then what would, right, then what would be the status that t'nai should stand? And yet, Rav comes along and says, Rav comes along and says, not true, that Rav will say, even if you make a rabbinic law, even if you make a t'nai that runs counter to rabbinic law, the t'nai is batal. Well, if that's the case, and Rav will say again, that the logic behind that would be, because Rav would say that the right of a husband to inherit his wife is dirabanan, and yet we still see that what? Even if you make a t'nai that runs counter to rabbinic law, the t'nai is batal. Well, if that's the case, haikitame ukihil chasehu, the Rav Mosif. Well, if that's the case, Rav is not really arguing Rabbi Gamliel at all. He's just simply what? He's just simply adding on to a new dimension of the halacha. Ella, rather, what's going on over here? Halacha kerb Shimon Gamliel do amar imesi yirashena. Rather, what Rav is saying, the halacha falls of Shimon Gamliel that says that if the wife predeceases the husband inherits her, v'lav mitame, and not according to his reasoning. Why? Rav Shimon Gamliel savar yirusha sabal daraisa. Because we'll say when it all comes down to it, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that the right of a husband to inherit his wife is biblical. And whoever makes a stipulation that runs counter to Torah law, the t'nai is batal. The Rav Sava Rav, on the other hand, holds Yerushas Habal Dirabanan. The right of a husband to inherit his wife is only midirabanan. But yes, so if that's the case, so why is the t'nai batal? The Chachamim Asu Chizuk LeDivreim Kishal Torah, and the Chachamim went ahead and bolstered their law to make it strong as biblical law.
Just in this instance.
Well, we see other instances of that also. There are certain times, now why Chazal choose to do that sometimes versus why other times not is a bigger discussion, but this is not the only case where we apply that principle.
It's not a general rule.
Correct. It's not the default. It's not the default. It's that we don't apply that rule unless, of course, the Gemara explicitly articulates it. So we'll say, so therefore, what the Gemara is suggesting here is something very interesting. So let's just keep our eye on the ball over here. So remember again, we're dealing with a very specific case in the Mishnah. Husband writes to the wife, husband writes, Din udvarim ainli binichsayich, I have nothing to do with your property. Beperosehem. Beperi perosehem. What was the rest of the Lashon? Beperosehem. Bechayayich ubimosech. While you're alive and while you're dead. When you die. So Tanakhama says he's yielded all rights. All rights, meaning lifetime rights as well as death benefits. What's the death benefit? That if she predeceases him, he inherits her. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, I agree, he's yielded everything except for the right to inherit her. Why? Because all of his rights are rabbinic, therefore he could yield those. But the right to inherit is biblical. And Rav says, whenever you make a t'nai that contradicts or contravenes biblical law, your t'nai is batal. The t'nai ultimately is done. So comes along Rav, and Rav says that the halacha follows Rav Shimon Gamliel, positive Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the t'nai is batal, but not for Rav Shimon Gamliel's logic. And what the Gemara has just explained is, what does that mean? Because Rav holds, I agree that t'nai is batal, but for a different reason. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that t'nai is batal because it's biblical. And masna mashakasu batorah t'na'u batal. Rav says, I believe that the husband's right to go ahead and inherit his wife is rabbinic. So why is the t'nai batal? Because the Chachamim bolstered their law even stronger than biblical law. And therefore, in this case, even though you're only making a t'nai to undermine or to contradict rabbinic law, nevertheless, the t'nai will be batal.
That's similar to that first answer?
I'm sorry? Correct. We just went full circle. Full circle. Rav Savar, Yerusha Sabal Dirabana. Now, Rav says, is that true? that does Rav really hold that the right of a husband to inherit his wife is only rabbinic? About now we learned, Rav Yochanan ben Baruch Omer Hayorish is Ishto, if a man inherits his wife, Yachzir Libnei Mishpacha, V'inach Emehen Adamin. So we'll say, listen to this. This is a very specific case. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, actually not yet, Rashi says, well, we're going to see actually what this is referring to. So let's just translate the words. If a husband goes ahead and inherits his wife, he should return it to his wife's family, meaning what he inherited from his wife. He should return it to them when, Rashi says, by Yovel. Now, boss, I want to point something out. Only properties that go back at Yovel are gifts and sales. If you inherit property, that property inheritance does not revert back at Yovel. Yet the Gemara is saying over here that if a husband inherits something from his wife, so he should return it back to her family at Yovel, but he should diminish from them a certain amount of money, meaning subtract a certain amount of money. Vavinimba, Micah, sir, what are you talking about? If you hold that husband's right to inherit his wife is biblical, so why should anything go back to our family at Yovel? Because again, remember, inheritance does not revert back. And if you say that his right to inherit is only midrabanan, so what are we talking about over here with money, right? Lemaisa, what money does he have the right to subtract? Rav said the olim kasava yerusha sabal daraisa. Also, what say? So what did Rav say? Rav said no. The ability of a husband to inherit his wife is what is daraisa. And Habosai, remember, boom. Now we have trouble, right? Why do we have trouble? Because we just said before that Rav holds that Yerusha Sabal Dirabana. So just bear that in mind. That line over there, that's the Kasha. Now we're going to fill in the rest of the blanks with the information, but just keep that in mind. So now the Gemara just quoted a Mishnah, or a Brisa, I should say, that talks about the fact that Rav holds that Yerusha Sabal Doraisa, when we just established 2 minutes ago, not even 2 minutes ago, the machlokes in Rav and Rav Shimon Gamliel is Rav Shimon Gamliel holds Yerusha Sabal Doraisa, and Rav holds this Dirabana. Okay, but keep that in your mind. So the Amar Rav, the Olam Kasav Yerusha Sabal Doraisa, Rav says that the right of a husband to inherit his wife is the oraisa. So what's the case? It's actually very interesting. Ukigon shahorishaso ishto besakvaras. People say, listen to this. The woman owned a cemetery. She owned a cemetery. And what happens? She predeceases him, and now he inherits the cemetery. Now what's the problem? Mishum pegam mishpacha. The issue over here is that if the husband retains right to the cemetery, it's a pigam. It's like not nice. It's an embarrassment for the family. What does it mean? Look at Rashi. Mishum pigam mishpacha, kinayhu lahem, shiu achirim nikbarim imahem, vehim yikbaru bikvura sachim. So mostly here's the issue. If the husband inherits the family cemetery from the wife, remember, this is her family. It's not his family. I want to be clear on that. You just married into it. It's not his family, right? So what happens? So Lunaisa, again, the issue over here is that, bless you, is that, again, it's a pagan for the family, because then other people, he has the right to bury whoever he wants in that cemetery. And what's going to happen? His wife's family, whose familial cemetery it is going to bury them, is not going to bury themselves, but is going to be buried ultimately somewhere else. So we'll see. One of the things also you have to realize is that, especially in times of the Gemara, you see this much more, this whole idea of family plots and family cemeteries was taken much more seriously than it is. You know, today it's not uncommon for family members of different parts to bury it in different places. Times of Chazal, first of all, times of Chazal, people did not spread out as much, but it was a much bigger thing. You had a family lot, that's where everybody was buried. So the Gemara says over here, what's the case? She died. He inherits her family's cemetery. So therefore, the Mishnah is saying is he should give it back to them at Yovel. But Lemaisa, again, because again, it's Pegam Mishpacha, and therefore Mishum Pegam Mishpacha Amar Rabbanon Lishkol Dmei Ulehader. So what did Chazal say? You know what? They're going to pay you for it. I mean, he doesn't have to give it back for free. They have to pay him to go ahead and repurchase the cemetery. But the Chazal are telling him, accept the money, give them back the cemetery. What does it mean? What does it mean that you subtract money? Demei kever ishto. You have to subtract out the amount for his wife's grave. So what does that mean? That since he's obligated to pay for his wife's burial, therefore, again, he can't charge her family for the price of her grave. Now, I will say, obviously, she's dead already. right? Because, you know, remember, this is a case of where he inherited her. But the idea is, I guess, the way you gauge the value of the cemetery is you look at the number of plots that are available, how much each plot is worth in Lamaisis. But he can't go ahead and say, well, you know what? I paid for her plot. You should reimburse me for her plot. He can't get reimbursed for his wife's own plot because the Maisa, again, that's his obligation. So the Gemara says, if a person sold, let's say, you know, a person was desperate for money, so what did they do? They sold their burial plot. They sold their burial plot. Or, again, v'derech kivro, or both say they owned rights on a pathway to the cemetery, they sold that. Ma'amado umakom espedo, or they owned a certain place where ultimately, again, ma'amad. Ma'amad, Rabbi says, when they stopped. Remember, again, we spoke about this in Moed Katan, that the way they used to do Levayis was they would take the arm, they would take the mita, the beer, upon which the body was, and they would march towards the cemetery, and they would stop along the way in different spots for wailing, W-A-I-L, for wailing and hesped. And nah, right, not harpooning or anything, right? And eulogies. So, Maisa, let's say a person sold his burial plot or sold the rights that he had to a makom hesped. So, what's the halacha? Bo'in b'nei mishpacha v'kovrinos al balkarcho mishum pegam mishpacha. So, we'll say when the guy who sold it died, so his family members have the right to bury him in his plot. We should begam mishpacha because it's not nice for the family if one of the family members is buried elsewhere. But Rabbi Sayyid, obviously, again, lemaisa, they'd have to reimburse the purchaser for the price of that plot. So again, remember, this is an interesting discussion by itself. That lemaisa, again, you see that there's a case of inheritance where we force the husband to give it back, to sell it back to her family because of begam mishpacha. But Rabbi Sayyid, remember, the whole point of this for our purposes is what? That Rav is just on record as saying that the husband's right to inherit his wife is biblical, to which the Gemara says, no, Rav doesn't mean it. Rav l'tamid Rav Yochanan ben Baruch ha'amar v'lei lo sfirale. So we'll say, Rav himself, interestingly enough, Rav himself doesn't hold. When Rav said that Yerusha Sabal d'Oraisa, he was not espousing his own Shita. Rather, he was explaining the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, who's explaining Lemaisa again why, although we want the husband to sell back the cemetery, why again in certain ways the husband could say, I don't want to. The reason he could say, I don't want to, even though we compel him to do so, is because Yerusha Sabal d'Oraisa. But Rav himself holds that Yerusha Sabal d'Rabbanan. So Rabbosai, what comes out from this sugya is, first of all, Halacha Lemaisa, the Rambam Shulchan Aruch, Paskins like Rabbi Shmuel Gamliel, namely again that halacha lemaisa, husband's right to, excuse me, that even if the husband writes dinu dvarim enli b'nichsayich beperos or peperos saying bechayecho b'moseich, even if he writes that lashon, when she dies he still inherits her. The fundamental machlokes he didn't have in Rabbi Shmuel Gamliel is why. So Rav Shimon Gamliel will say, because the right to inherit is mid-araisa, and if you make a t'nai that runs contrary to a din-daraisa, masna mashakasa batora, t'na'u bato. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav says, no, husband's right to inherit his wife is drabanon. If it's drabanon, then why is his t'nai bato? Because again, chachomim osu chizuk l'divrehem, yoser mishal Torah. Because there are times when the rabbis made certain legislation and they made it stronger, then, or I should say, just as strong as biblical law. Therefore, Rav will say, even though it's only rabbinic right, if you make a t'nai that runs contrary to your rabbinic right, the t'nai itself is batal. So both will agree in the bottom line, but just disagree in the fundamental mechanics, namely on the nature of the entitlement of a husband to go ahead and inherit his wife. Says the Mishnah. Misha meis v'niach isho balcho. What's actually a very interesting case. Someone who died, and he left behind a wife, a creditor, the Yarshin and inheritors. So we'll say, so now, what does that mean? He left, of course, they're all mourning his loss, but more importantly, they want their money, right? So over here, so the creditor wants to get paid for his debt, right? The wife wants her ksuva, and the Yarshin want inheritance. So what happens? And I will say, let's say the deceased person had a pikadon. I will say, now, what's a pikadon? Pikadon means an actual object. Meaning, let's say, again, when he bought, I'm sorry? collateral, right? He borrowed money. He borrowed money. So what happens? Again, he has a Rolex watch in the hands of the creditor. So there's something in this property in existence. So he had a pikadon or milve, or for that matter, Rabosai, there was someone else who owed him money. Biadacherim. So we'll say now the shaila is what? The shaila is who gets that money? Rabbi Tarfon says, Yinasnu l'kol shel shabahem. Rabbi Tarfon says, we give it to the weakest among them, to the weakest one. Now we'll say, now this is interesting. Now we'll see in the Gemara, Rashi already points this out, that the weakest one we will see is the person with the weakest claim. We'll discuss what that means. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Im rachamim min adin. Rabbi Kiva says, we do not, there's no rachmanus over here, give it to the weakest one. Ela, yinasnu liyarshim. Rather, Rabbi Kiva says, we always give it to the inheritors. Why? Shekulan tzvichin shvua, v'ena yarshin tzvichin shvua. Because as we will see, all of them being a creditor and a woman, must take a shvua before collecting from the estate of the deceased. The only person who doesn't need a shvua is who? Is the yarshim, are the children, the inheritors. So because that, Rabbi Kiva says, when we have multiple claiming parties, lemais, it always goes to the yarshim. So the Gemara says, hiniach peros talushim min hakarka. Let's say the deceased died and he left detached produce. So what's the halacha? Kol hakol debohen zacha bohen. Whoever gets there first and grabs them first, ultimately, again, gets them. Okay. Zachsa isha yosim iksuva. So let's say the woman grabs the fruit, but yet say it turns out that the value of the fruit is more than her ksuva. Or ubalchov yosim achovo. Or the balchov grabs the fruit, but it turns out that the value of the fruit is more than the debt. So what's the halacha? Hamosar, what do you do with the additional amount? Rabbi Tarfon says, you give it to the weakest among them. Rabbi Kiva, we'll define what that means. Rabbi Kiva Omer, again, I'm sorry, but Tarfon, stop it already. This is not about Rachmanus. Ella, yinasnu liyarshim. Whenever there's excess, you give it to the yarshim. Why? Shekulan tzvichin shvua. Because all of the other parties, namely the wife and the creditor, require a shvua before collecting. Veina yarshim tzvichin shvua. But the yarshim do not require a shvua. Says the Gemara. Remember how the Mishnah opened up. The Mishnah opened up. Someone died. He left behind a wife who wants her ksuva, creditor who wants payment, and children who want inheritance. And there's a pikadon or a milva, right? There's either a collateral, an object, or someone else owes him money. So the Gemara asks, why do you need both milva and pikadon? Why do you have to mention both of those things? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Ditana milva. If it would have just said that the deceased died and someone owes him money, so I would have said, Bahakam Rabbi Tarfon. That's what Rabbi Tarfon says, that we give it to the weakest one. Mishum de milva lahotzan nitna. Because we'll say, the Maisa again, a milva alone, that somebody, meaning money that someone owns the deceased, is not really so much in existence. Because it's not, that's what means milva lahotzan nitna. That the milva, the money is given to the borrower, and it's his. It's his until the time of repayment. So it's not really considered to be like a davar ba'olam. And therefore, again, we'll give it to the weakest one. Avapikadon, di'isa be'ene. But I will say a pikadon, which mamish is a real object in existence. It's here, it's extended, it's there. The object is in its full form. I would have thought that in that case, Rabbi Tarfon would agree with Rabbi Akiva that we should give it to the heirs, we should give it to the inheritors, the children. And if it would have just said the case of pikadon, I would have said, Bahakam Rabbi Akiva. That's when Rabbi Akiva says you give it to the yarshim. But in the case of Milve, Ema Modi la Rabbi Tarfon, I would have thought that perhaps he uses Rabbi Tarfon. Therefore, I will say, because the cases really of Milve and Pikadon are dissimilar, therefore you need them both stated. Maila Kosha, we'll say, remember, Rabbi Tarfon keeps saying, give it to the weakest one. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanin, Omer la Kosha Shabirayo. It refers to the one who has the weakest proof. Rashi says, "Lekoshal sheberaya." He says, "Lemisha shtara muuchar shlo yucha lichof lekuchos hakomim lo." So also remember again, all of these people do have one additional way to go ahead and recapture payment. And how is that? That if the husband sold off other properties after the time, after the date of the ksuva, or after the date of his loan transaction, so if there's no money left in the estate, then Lemaisa, the creditor and the woman, could go after other people to whom the husband sold property. So therefore, Rabbi Tarfon says, the kosher, the weakest one, is the one with the shtar that has the latest date. Why? Because the one with the latest date has the least, well, I guess we'll call for lack of a better term, like look back period, has the least amount of time with which to cease from the kuchos. Therefore, we give them any properties that the estate actually has. Rabbi Yochanan Amar the Ksuva Sisha. Rabbi Yochanan says, no. Rabbi say that it means the woman, the Ksuva. Meaning that what Rabbi Yochanan is interpreting that when Rabbi Tarfon says, we give the property to the weakest one, that refers to the woman. Why is that? Mishum Chino. In order to, for favor purposes. Rabbi say, now the idea over here is that if a woman knows, what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is, we want to make sure that a woman knows that her interests are protected to the greatest degree. Therefore, Rabbi Tarfon says, in a case where there are limited assets, the first person we are going to look after is going to be the woman and Chino, so that the husband should find favor in the eyes of the women, and the woman should be willing and ready to marry. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara is just pointing out that this is already in a pre-existing machlokes tanoim. Rabbi Yamin says that we give the money, it's not really money, it's either the pikadon or the milva. We give the money to the one with the weakest document, meaning the star with the latest date, and v'hu kashan. This is an appropriate practice. Rabbi Elazar Omer l'ksuvas isha. No, we will say in this case again, where the deceased died, and there is an existing pikadon or milva, we give it to the woman to satisfy her ksuva debt mishum china, in order that husbands in general should find favor in the wife's eyes, that men should find favor in the eyes of women. In order that women will be able to be more agreeable to marry, we want to secure their financial claims to the ksuva. Fine. Heniach peres atlushin. So let's remember again, the Mishnah said that if husband died and he left detached produce on the field, what's the halacha? Whoever gets there first gets it. Rabbi Akiva, my area mosar. Why does Rabbi Akiva say it's only the leftover amounts? Kul hu nami diyarshin havu. Well, say, remember the Mishnah spoke about the case where Lemaisa, again, let's say the woman is the one who seizes the payor solution, the detached produce first. So what's the halacha? If she seized amounts in excess of her ksuva, so remember again, Rabbi Akiva says it goes to the Yarshim, and Rabbi Tarfon says it goes to the weakest one. So the Gemara says, why does Rabbi Akiva say that only the excess goes to the Yarshim? In reality, what? According to Rabbi Akiva, all of the payors go to the Yarshim. To which the Gemara says, Inachinami, Va'ididam Rabbi Tarfon Mosar, Tana ihu nami mosar. But rather, again, Rabbi Akiva is just maintaining textual symmetry, and the same way that Rabbi Tarfon was talking about the excess, Rabbi Akiva also, therefore, talks about the excess. But in reality, Rabbi Akiva would hold that the entire amount of the peros haklushin, the detached produce, really becomes the property of the Yarshin. But Rabbi Akiva, tfisala mahanya klal. So is that true? Does Rabbi Akiva hold that tfisa, that grabbing it, doesn't work? You know, I mean, you're both like, Rabbi Akiva makes it sound like that in this case in the Mishnah, well, let's say there is detached produce. So the Mishnah said, whoever gets it first ultimately will own it. Rabbi Akiva says it's the property of the Yarshim. Now what the Gemara is asking is, does Rabbi Tarfon really hold that tfisa, if somebody grabs it, it doesn't work at all? After all, we said, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Vahu Shetafas, Mechaim, but yet we learn ultimately again that this ability to seize property while the husband is still alive ultimately still works. What the Gemara is saying over here is like this. Rabbi Nachman is saying, if you look at Rashi, he says, I'm Rabbi Nachman, Mahanya hecha de tafas Mechaim shlames, Vahachi gamrla Rav Nachman meirabe. Suppose to listen to this. So Rava says that in the name of Rav Nachman, that there is this ability if someone seized property during the lifetime of the husband or the man, when the man was still alive, that such a tefisa does work, such a grabbing does work. So both say, Rabbi Kiva makes it sound like that if somebody grabs the property, under no circumstances will it work. But yet, we have other shitos that say that lamaisa, if perhaps there's an issue of grabbing the property when the husband died, but if somebody who had a claim against the husband grabs property while the husband is still alive, that lamaisa, such a tefisa, such a grabbing could work, meaning that the person who grabbed it would be able to keep it. So the Gemara says, well, let's analyze this. Rabbi Tarfon, Dimanchi Hecha. Now, we'll say, let's go back for a second. According to Rabbi Tarfon, who holds that if there was detached produce left behind, so what does Rabbi Tarfon say? Whoever gets it, gets it. So I'll say, so now, remember, right? That was what the Mishnah said. Whoever, Hiniach Peros Tzolushin, Right. Kol HaKodem Bahen Zacha Bahen. Whoever gets there first gets it. So the Gemara asks, the Manchi Hecha. Right, the manchi hecha. So where is this produce? Where is it sitting? So the Gemara says, Rav Ushmol Dermi Tarbayu, V'hu Shetzi Burun U'minochen B'Yishos HaRabim. The produce, the detached produce, is literally piled and sitting in public domain. Aval B'Simta Lo. But Rav Ushmol, if it was sitting in the Simta, so Simta, Rav Ushmol, is, we'll actually look at Rashi. If you look at Rashi, the manchi hecha, Hanach Meros, the Kamar Rabbi Tarfon, the B'Shas Misalo Zach, Uban Yarshin, Eli Zaka Bohana Kol. And here's the interesting kash the Gemara is asking. In order to say that whoever grabs the detached produce keeps it, what you're in essence saying is, see, before this Mishnah came along, I would have thought the following. Man dies, leaves behind detached produce. Who owns that detached produce? What would you have thought before this? The heirs, the Yarshim, right? That's the logical assumption because the heirs inherit everything that the deceased owned. So yet the Gemara is saying, however, if he left behind detached produce, whoever gets there and grabs it first, he or she owns it. So the Gemara says, well, where is that produce? Because we'll say, here's what we know for sure. If that produce is sitting on the land owned by the deceased, then everyone would have to agree that's what? Who owns it? The heirs. Why? Because Rabbi said the moment the deceased dies, the heirs inherit the property, right? The property inherits that which is sitting on top of it, kinyan chaser, and therefore the heirs would own the detached produce. So the Gemara is asking, where is this produce sitting that someone else has the right to go ahead and come and claim it and take it? To which the Gemara says, oh, it's in Rishus Rabim. It's in public domain. So in other words, it is not sitting in the deceased's property. And because of that, again, whoever gets there first and grabs it ultimately will inherit it. Aval b'simta. But Rav Yosef is sitting in a simta. Look at Rashi. Simta is Karen Zavis HaSmuch Rishus Rabim. So a simta is like a little bit, it's like the shoulder. It's like a little bit off the, I'm sorry? Oh, right. Well, it's like a, I don't know what the good English word for it is, but it's not an alleyway, but it's an area off the Rishus HaRabim that is more private and quiet. So if it's sitting in a simta, then the ma'isa again, this would not work. Look at Rashi. V'ab simta lo, v'ab simta lo amar tarifan kol kodim zachaban. Techevad demakam aray lekinyin hu ki darina ba'amad mishicha kanya hasam. Afilu ma'ad Rishus HaRabim lo kanya ein zemakam hefker v'zachu ba'en yershim mishas misa. And I'm going to say, here's the chilek. See, Rishus HaRabim belongs to everyone. Therefore, the ma'isa again, if the produce is sitting in Rishus HaRabim, whoever gets there first will own it. We'll say a simta essentially becomes the domain of whoever's standing in it. So therefore, again, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that if the produce was in a simta, that then becomes the property of the Yarshim. Then we will not say kalakodim zacha bohen. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish b'simta. And Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish argue, and they, excuse me, not argue, they both agree, that's what? Even if the produce was sitting in a simta, still the logic of kalakodim zacha bohen applies. In other words, Rabbi say, so what's the fundamental, so here's what's interesting, is that apparently everyone's going to agree that if the detached produce was sitting in the property of the deceased, that the Yarshim will inherit it. In order for this concept of Kavakol Debaim Zachman, whoever gets it first will acquire it, it has to be off-site. So everyone agrees, if it's in Rishus HaRabim, everyone will agree Kavakol Debaim Zachman. The Shal is in the Simta, because on one hand, Simta is not really Rishus HaRabim. Simta is an area that could be made into Rishus HaYachid, meaning whoever's standing there, it becomes their personal Rishus. The issue over here is what? The Yarshim are not there in that Simta now. So the first opinion will say, but still, a Simta makes it, as if it's in the domain of the heirs, whereas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish say, no, Simta is still considered to be public domain, and therefore, if internet produce is sitting in the Simta, whoever gets there first will ultimately acquire it. Dun Dainei Krabi Tarfon. So let's listen to this. So this case came up, and judges adjudicated the case like Rabbi Tarfon. But Vahadre Reish Lakish Lo'uvda Minayu. Look at Rashi. Vahadre Lo'uvda Savar Lakid Rabbi Akiva Delo Mahan Yitfiza. So apparently this case came up and Dayonim passed it like Rabbi Tarfo. Namely, there was detached produce somewhere, wherever it was, Sarabim, Simta, and they passed like Rabbi Tarfo that whoever grabbed it first ultimately was the owner, and yet Reish Lakish made them retract that ruling, and Paskin like Rabbi Akiva that such a tfisa, such a grabbing does not work. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Asisa Kishal Torah. So Rabbi Yochanan said, wow, Reish Lakish, you're making them reverse the ruling. You're making it sound like this is a matter of biblical proportions. Rashi says, Asisa, Divrei Rabbi Akiva, Ki'ilu Hein Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, Shechazarta Ma'aseh Beis Din. Meaning, Rabbi Yochanan is bothered. Because here you have the Dayanim go ahead. So this case Mamish came up. Detached produce on some place other than the property of the deceased. So the Dayanim said, okay, whoever gets there first gets it. They paskin like that. Reish Lakish comes along and says, no, you have to reverse that ruling. Rabbi Yochanan says, well, what are you doing? First of all, you have to understand, for a Beis Din to reverse a ruling, as we're going to see, is not a pashut thing. We don't do that except in exceptional circumstances. And Rabbi Yochanan says, why are you doing that? Meaning, again, if they paskined wrongfully, that's one thing. They did not paskin wrongly. Remember, they paskin like Rabbi Tarfon. It's a legitimate shita. You want to say you don't like that psak, that's fine. So going forward, we'll say, oh, paskin like Rabbi Akiva. But what right do you have to tell them to reverse the position when the mice, again, the position that they used was a legitimate position? To which the Gemara says, it must be that Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing about the following. Demar savar ta'abidvar mishnah chozer. It was like, because one opinion says that lemaisa, if a Beis Din makes a mistake in an explicit ruling, they have to retract that ruling. And therefore, again, Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish will hold that bipashtos mishnayis follow Rabbi Akiva. Therefore, if the Beis Din paskin like Rabbi Tarfon, they made a mistake in an explicit ruling in a Mishnah. Umar Savar, the other opinion, Rabbi Yochanan holds, Tabidra Mishnah in a Choser, that note that if even if a Beis Din made a mistake in an explicit ruling in a Mishnah, we still don't force them to retract. Now, I will say, now this is part of a much bigger discussion in terms of when we force a Beis Din to retract the ruling. I will say, you understand something, that we are very reticent to ever have a Beis Din retract a ruling, because that erodes the fundamental, that removes the teeth of Beis Din. Now, I'll tell you something interesting. There are cases where the psak of Beis Din will stand, but if it's clear that it's wrong, we will make the judges personally liable to the litigant to repay damages, but we will still allow the psak of Beis Din to stand in order to preserve the integrity of psak Beis Din. So what the Gemara is saying over here is perhaps the machlokis Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish centers on when we cause a Beis Din to retract their ruling. Reish Lakish will say that if they make a mistake in an explicit Mishnah, which should be the case over here, because Rabbi Kiva states his shita in the Mishnah, and the halacha usually follows Rabbi Kiva in the Mishnah, that this is a mistake in an explicit ruling, therefore they have to retract it. And Rabbi Yochanan says no. To which Gemara says no. Lo, the chulda alma. Everyone agrees that if a Beis Din made a mistake in a clearly stated halacha, we force them to retract the ruling. I will say that everybody will agree with that. Meaning, so they went ahead and they just made a mistake. It happens. But their mistake is clear and it's obvious that they have to retract. What are they arguing about? Because they will say, oh, the fundamental machlokes is like this. Reish Lakish holds that the halacha follows Rabbi Akiva. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Rabbi Yochanan holds that Allah loves Rabbi Akiva when he disagrees with his friends, but not when he disagrees with his Rabbeim. Umar Savar Halach Afilu Mirabo. And the other opinion, Reish Lakish, hold that Allah follows Rabbi Akiva in every circumstance, even when Rabbi Akiva argues with his Rabbi. Vibay say, Maduchuli Amma Halach Rabbi Akiva Mechavir Avilu Mirabo. They will say, oh, maybe everyone agrees. That's what? That halacha was Rabbi Akiva when he argues with his peers, but not when he argues with his Rebbe. So what's the machlokes in Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish? Bahacha miflegi. Mar savar Rabbi Tarfon Rabbo hava. Omar savar chaveiro hava. They will say, what's the fundamental machlokes over here? What the relationship between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon was. Rabbi Yochanan holds that Rabbi Tarfon was Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe. And therefore, again, that halacha does not follow Rabbi Akiva when he argues with his Rebbe, and Reish Lakish holds that Rabbi Tarfon was Rabbi Akiva's peer, his friend, and therefore the ma'isa what? That halacha does follow Rabbi Akiva over Rabbi Tarfon. And perhaps everyone agrees that Rabbi Tarfon was Rabbi Akiva's peer. Here's what they're arguing about. Mar savar halacha itmar. Umar Savar Matin Itmar. One holds Rabbi said that whenever Rabbi Akiva argues with a peer, the halacha always follows Rabbi Akiva. And the other opinion holds that whenever Rabbi Akiva argues with a peer, we slant the halacha in favor of Rabbi Akiva. I mean, Rabbi said it's not a we're not definitively saying the halacha always follows Rabbi Akiva, but generally we tilt the halacha towards Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says, "Crave Rabbi Yochanan tafas paradiasmi." I'm also listen to this. So the relative of Rabbi Yochanan. So also I say, therefore, again, I want to be clear. So now we have a fundamental machlug between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about who the halacha follows, Rabbi Akiva or ultimately Rabbi Tarfon. And a fundamental machlug is as to why each were so embedded in their particular position. Now the Gemara tells a story. So the relative of Rabbi Yochanan seized a cow from Yisomim Misimta. Suppose say, so here's a case over here where the relative Rabbi Yochanan was a creditor of the deceased. Man dies, debt is still unpaid. So the relative slash creditor goes and seizes a cow from the orphans in a simta. Rabbi Yochanan. So they came for Rabbi Yochanan. Amr lehu shapir tafas tuha. You did a good job, because also remember again, that's like peros tushin, that's like detached produce, and the mice again, it was in a simta, so that was fine. Also look at Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Amr lehu zila haju. So they went to Rabbi Shimon, they went to Rish Lakish, and Rish Lakish said, give it back. It's not appropriate. Also look at Rabbi Yochanan. They went back to Rabbi Yochanan. They told Rabbi Yochanan, listen, Reish Lakish says you have to give it back. Amar lehu ma'eh says shekenedi chaluk alai. What could I do? My friends disagree with me. So we'll say, Rabbi Yochanan was essentially saying, listen, if Reish Lakish is telling you to give it back, then give it back. Hu gavra bakra diyasmi detafsi. Excuse me. Hu bakra diyasmi detafsi Torah minei bachov. Excuse me, but minei. So see what happened. There was a bakra, we'll say, is like a shepherd. So there was a particular shepherd who was watching over the animals of the Yisomim. And what happened? The tafsi tura minei balchov amar mechayim tafis nale ubakra amar laachra misa tafse. So we'll say, so what happened? So the balchov creditor came along and seized one of the animals in satisfaction of his debt from the shepherd. Shepherd came along and said it was an illegal seizure. Why? Because he seized it after the creditor had already died. And because we'll say again, remember, passing like Rabbi Akiva, that you can't just seize it. The creditor said, no, I seized it while what? The creditor was still alive. Now, boss, remember, if everyone's going to agree that Lamaist, if he seizes it while the creditor is alive, that is a legal seizure. That is. While the debtor was alive, thank you. I'm seizing it in satisfaction of payment of the debt. Well, there was life. So what happened? So they came up for Rav Nachman. Amar Leiv, so Rav Nachman said to the shepherd, Islucha Sahadi Ditafse, do you even have witnesses that the creditor seized the animal? Amar Leiv Lav. So the shepherd said, I have no proof of anything. Amar Leiv, so if that's the case, Rav Nachman said, Migu di yachol lemeimar lakuachu biyadi, yachol nami lemeimar mechayim tafis nale. So listen to Rav Osai. So technically speaking, so Rabbi Yochanan said, Rav Nachman said, look, the creditor has a migo. What's the migo, Rav Osai? He could just as easily say, I bought this animal. Right, I bought this animal, but yes, and no one could have argued that because remember there are no witnesses. So because he has the migo, he could have said I bought it. Therefore, he's believed to say what? I seized it, and I seized it while the debtor was still alive. I've Amar Reish Lakish Hagodras Inlan Chazaka, but Reish Lakish says that they're both saying animals that wander. Hagodros. There's no chazaka, Rabosai. You can't claim that they're yours just because they're by you. Meaning, Rabosai, because since the animals wander, the fact that it's in your property, there's not a chazaka that it's yours. Shiny tula de mesira loroa. But this case is different, why, Rabosai? Because this ox was given over to a shepherd. Therefore, the chazaka is what? That it was in the shepherd's property. And therefore, again, Lemaisa, the fact that the creditor now has it shows that it's his. And because he has a migo that he could have said, I bought it, he is believed to what? He's believed to say that I seized it during the lifetime of the creditor. All right, boss, we'll have to stop over here. We'll pick up Emirat Hashem with Tura de Mesira Leroa de Benesia tomorrow.